Hey, we're going to get started. Thank you all for coming. My name is Caleb Brown. I used to be a student here at Briarcrest, and I was in the Biblical Studies program. I would encourage you, if you are thinking about applying, to apply. Shameless plug, some of the best 4.5 years of my life were in this place, and I'm really, really grateful for this community, and I really believe that God really blesses this place. He has for many, many years, and you won't regret coming here, so please do that. Like I said, my name is Caleb Brown, and I'm going to share a bit of my story with regards to my sexuality with you today. And before I get into that, I want to talk about stories and narratives that shape us. So we all have been shaped by stories, by narratives. These are identity-shaping narratives. There's identity-shaping narratives all around us in the world. We see this on social media. We see this on TV. The things that we read, the things that we hear, the stories we've been told growing up, these things shape our identity. And these stories and narratives, they're actually after our longings and our desires. So let's just define what stories is. Stories help us explain everything in our experience, from science to relationships, from feelings to memories, and from questions to objections. And with every story we hear, read, or listen, our mind makes cognitive and emotional connections that shape our perspective of the world. A narrative is a story that you write or tell to someone, usually in great detail. A narrative can be a work of poetry or prose, or even a song, theater, or dance. Often a narrative is meant to include the whole story. So stories shape our experience and the way we view the world. Another way of seeing this is the word liturgy. So we might be familiar with the word liturgy if we have been to a Catholic church or an Anglican church. But this is another way of viewing narratives and stories that shape us. So liturgies make us certain kinds of people. And what defines us is what we love. This is from James K.A. Smith. He's an amazing Christian author. And he talks a lot about these liturgies that shape us and form us. Our wants and longings and desires are at the core of our identity, the wellspring from which our actions and behavior flow. Our ultimate love and desire is shaped by practices, not ideas that are merely communicated to us. So Smith talks about these cultural liturgies that are after our deepest longings. All of us have been shaped by these liturgies, whether you know it or not, whether you consciously chose to believe certain liturgies or stories or narratives, whether you chose that or not, we've all been shaped. And I really believe that these narratives and stories, at the heart, is a version of what it means to flourish as humans. These narratives are trying to tell us what it means to flourish as human beings. It's a vision of flourishing. I mentioned this, but whether it's Instagram, social media, TikTok, Twitter, Facebook, all of these things are after our desires. They're shaping us. They're making us become a certain person. And they're showing us a version of what the good life is. And it's interesting that the story of the scriptures, the beginning of the scripture, we hear a story of what it means to be human, what it means to be made in God's image. God, in the beginning of the scriptures, it says that he made humanity in his image. There was chaos over the waters, and he brought order into the chaos. He spoke light into the darkness. A good God created a good world. The interesting thing about this story is that at the time, in the ancient Near East, there were many stories circulating, many other narratives that were being told about creation. The Genesis story was told later on, and the Genesis story functions as a counter story to these other stories, these other narratives that were being told. These other narratives about creation were chaotic, and there was bloodshed and violence and war with these gods. And it's out of this violence that creation was birthed. It wasn't out of love. It wasn't out of order. It wasn't like the Genesis story. And so remember that the Genesis story is a counter story. And I would argue that all of Scripture is a counter story. It's a counter narrative to the narratives and stories that are being told today. In the story of the Scriptures, to be truly human is to follow Jesus. We experience true humanity when we follow after Jesus, because He is the truest man. He is the truest human. And He invites us to be shaped and formed by Him as we follow after Him. I want us to ask ourselves this question. Is my story wrapped up in the story of God's faithfulness? Has His story touched mine? Or am I living my life according to another story or narrative? Maybe we can just ask Jesus that in this moment. Jesus, has your story touched my story? Am I living my life according to another story or narrative? Which story is shaping your life? Maybe it's multiple stories, but we should consider which stories we have believed to be true. Each story has a storyteller, and each storyteller has a desired outcome of that story. So each story has a storyteller, and every storyteller has a desired outcome. When we think about the story of the Scripture that's told, the storyteller is God. And He tells us a story of what it means to be human, what it means to truly flourish. And I would say the other storyteller is Satan. We see throughout the Scriptures that he is the accuser. He tries to make God's creation believe a lie. He tells a counter story to the story that's been told all along. Everything he does is trying to counter what God has already said. Jesus says that Satan is the father of lies. And so we can believe that the stories that he tells are full of lies. In the story of the Scriptures, to be truly human and to experience true humanity is to be who we were created to be. To live as we were created to live. To be who you are. The interesting thing about the narrative that the Scriptures teach us about who we are is that we hear this in society. We hear this in our culture today. Just be you. Be true to who you are. We hear this narrative all the time. Do whatever you want as long as you feel good. Live your life the way you want. Just be you. The interesting thing about this is that it's a counterfeit story. It's coming against the Genesis story, directly against what God has said. Because we were made in His image. That's who we are. And He showed us what it means to be truly human and to flourish. But we choose against this story. And we believe a lie about who we truly are. Ironically, we do exactly what Adam and Eve did in the garden. We choose to define good and evil on our own terms. We think we know the better way, despite God already showing us the better way. So I'm going to share a bit of my story. As you've probably guessed, I believe and accept the story of the Scriptures. And I believe that because when I was 18, Jesus broke into my life and he touched my story. He breathed life into my story and he changed my trajectory. I was going one way, believing the stories and narratives that I had been raised with, and Jesus came and spoke a different story over me. I haven't always lived according to this story. As I mentioned, I met Jesus when I was 18. And as you probably guessed by the title of the seminar, I experienced same-sex attractions. And from a very young age, this has been my story. Just to share a bit of my story, so my dad left my mom when I was in grade 3. And my family was kind of dysfunctional. I wasn't close with majority of my siblings. Did not like my brother, and my mom raised us kids the best that she could. And I remember being exposed to pornography at a very, very young age. And I remember the first moment I saw pornography, and I knew in that moment the effect that it was having on me. And I could feel in my mind and my body that this wasn't right, that I wasn't supposed to see those things. And so I knew the effect it had on me. And looking back, I can see how in that moment, I believe Satan was trying to speak over my identity and trying to define my identity in a different way. Like I said, I was mainly raised by my mother, and for the most part, my sisters as well. The majority of my friends were girls growing up, because I felt comfortable and safe around girls. And maybe that's because of my experience with my dad leaving. I wouldn't say that's the only reason, but it's part of it. Looking back, it's not hard to see how the narrative and the story I was raised with and that shaped my life from a young age, it's easy to see how that affected me and how it's affected me now. And my experience in elementary school just kind of added to this story. I've always been very slim, as you can see. And when I was younger, I was made fun of a lot. And I had a really high-pitched voice. It might be hard to imagine now. If you've ever heard me sing, I'm very, very low. People made fun of me for that. They saw this in me, and they didn't see it as masculine. And I was called every name. In the book, I was called gay boy, fag, queer, homo, feminine, girly. And last but not least, they got very creative with my name, and they called me Gay Love, which didn't feel very nice at the time. This whole time, even though I knew I had these attractions, deep down I had a belief in the narrative of the Scriptures, in the way I believe God created us. So I had that with me all along, but I was so conflicted because I have these desires. And the stories and the narratives that people were speaking over me was just pushing me in that direction, enforcing my identity in that. I remember I'll say this. I did start to believe the names that people called me. And I remember the first time I watched gay porn. And through that experience, it just, for me, it woke up this desire in me, this longing that I didn't know I had. I thought this was who I was and what I truly desired. I longed for intimacy with guys. And even though something in me knew that my longing was misdirected, fast forward to 2013. As I mentioned, I became a Christian when I was 18. Sorry, did I say 2013? Yeah, 2013. I met Jesus in Victoria. I had no intention of following Jesus or becoming a Christian. I made fun of Christians on a regular basis. And I thought they were weird. I still kind of think that. But yeah, I remember being in my room in Victoria, and leading up to this moment, I was having a lot of spiritual encounters that were not good. And I remember just feeling so desperate and so afraid and scared. And one night, my sister sent me a psalm. I didn't have a Bible, but she sent it over the phone. And I read it. It was Psalm 91. And as I got to verse 4, it says, "He will cover you with his feathers, and under his wings you will find refuge." And I remember reading that psalm and just feeling the embrace of the Father in that moment, feeling loved and seen and held for the first time. As I read it out loud, the presence of God just came in my room. And I knew Jesus was real. In that moment, it was just like this click for me. And I knew that he was calling me to follow him. And I remember immediately having fear over what this meant for my life, because I knew what it meant for my life. I lost most of my friends after that. And I realized very soon that because of the way I interpret the scriptures with regards to sexuality, I believe that my desire, my having these attractions for the same sex, was not what God desired for me. Now, since then, it's been quite a journey. Just check the time. There's been really beautiful moments in following Jesus, and there's been really hard moments. And yeah, I think I wanted to really just share the honest struggle for people who are same-sex attracted or gay in following Jesus. And I just want to acknowledge and recognize there's lots of different ways that people identify, and I want to honor that. But for this seminar, I'm just specifically talking about people in the gay community. And I know that's quite broad. I remember when I first became a Christian, I really prayed that Jesus would take these attractions away. And I had this belief because of narratives that I heard in the church that if you pray, he's going to make you straight. And I believed that. And to much sadness, he never answered those prayers. And I realized after many years that narrative that I was told, that's what Jesus wants, is to make you straight. That's not actually what he wants. And I really believe that it's really damaging to tell people. I think it gives them a false hope. I haven't met anyone. I've not met one person or heard one story of someone who experienced same-sex attraction and magically didn't anymore. I've heard people say, "Jesus set me free from this lifestyle," and they'll make it sound like they don't have attractions anymore, but they do. And when we promote that or say that to people, it gives a false hope, and it just sets those people up for failure, in a sense. I was really grateful coming to Briarcrest, because when I came to Briarcrest, that was the first time I ever told anyone of my story. I was 21, and I didn't ever feel like I could share that in the church. And I know a lot has changed in the last 10 years, but the reality is I didn't feel like there was space, and I didn't feel like anyone was able to actually walk alongside me because of things I heard, because of beliefs that people had, because of the way people would see people who are gay. And I remember coming to Briarcrest, and within the first month, I met Cody Matchett and Dan Gabor. They're no longer here, but two amazing men. And that first week I was there, there was a conversation about being gay and being a Christian. And I was really intrigued by that. And I attended as a new student. And I remember after hearing that seminar, I was like, I need to go talk to Cody and Dan and just meet them. I walked into their office and met them, and I told them my story. And that was one of the first times I ever told anyone. But I felt safe around them because they opened that conversation. They were willing to facilitate that space and honor people who experienced that. I think it's important for all of us in this room, whether you are straight, gay or bi or whatever your experience is, it's important to acknowledge people who experience that, who experience these desires that seem contrary to what the scriptures teach. I think it's important for us to acknowledge how hard that is for people, how lonely that is. Feeling like you're this other person, and not feeling welcome, especially when the church is always talking about marriage. Just get a wife and you'll be happy, or get a husband and whatever. I hear this every week, constantly pushed from the stage. This view that if you get married and have sex, you'll be fulfilled and happy. But for people who that might not be an option for, we need to acknowledge how damaging that is. Because then you start to think, oh, can I not experience fulfillment? Can I not experience that blessing from God of intimacy that I think is a human need? Sorry, I went off my notes there. Okay. For my story, I wouldn't be here if I didn't believe in Jesus. My story would be completely meaningless and have no bearing on the truth if I didn't encounter Jesus. And I believe whatever your experience is with regards to sexuality, all of us need to allow Jesus to shape us. We are all sexual beings. And our spirituality and our sexuality are intrinsically tied together. They can't be separated. And I think so often the church has separated those two. But all of us need to reckon with who Jesus is and ask ourselves the question, what are we going to do about him? Tozer says this. He says, what do you think of Jesus Christ, and what will you do with him? And I think there's an invitation for us to allow Jesus to define who we are and our sexuality. Once again, if Jesus showed us how to be truly human, then we should probably believe what he teaches as the true story. The true story of human flourishing. I mentioned this, but the world is telling us a narrative about sexuality. The narrative that our culture tells us is do what you want with your body. Liberate yourself by fulfilling every desire you have. But the narrative that Jesus says is completely opposite. And I think just in that fact, that tells us that there's something going on here. That Jesus is getting at something. When the world says, do what you want with your body, fulfill your desires, and you'll be truly free. But then Jesus says, if anyone wants to follow me, they must deny themselves, take up their cross, and come after me. anyone who desires to save their life will lose it, but anyone who loses their life for my sake will find it. That is completely opposed to the current narratives of our culture today. Jesus shows us this posture in the garden before the crucifixion when he's crying out to the Father. He has these desires. They're good desires to not suffer, to not go through with this. He cries out. He says, Lord, take this cup from me. But not my will, but yours be done. So Jesus shows us what it means to be a disciple. If the story that we are believing does not promote allegiance to Jesus, if we're not compelled to faithfulness to the Messiah, then we maybe should reevaluate our story. This is a quote from an author that I really love. His name's Matthew Bates. He says, false or pseudo-gospels will nearly always encourage you to undertake a journey of self-discovery. That is, selfish discovery. To find out who you truly are, I've got to be free to be me. When someone questions your self-centered journey, you'll be encouraged to jettison your relationship with them by labeling them toxic, by labeling toxic anyone who won't unconditionally affirm who you are becoming. Sorry. Those who disagree with your vision for yourself are canceled. But there is one thing false gospels will never ask you to do. This is how you can most easily spot the fraud. They will never consistently encourage you toward a cross-shaped allegiance to Jesus and his kingdom. The goal will never be the transformation of you and those around you into his suffering for others yet glorified image. I think that's just written so beautifully and really captures the invitation of Jesus to all of us to lay down our lives, our desires, and follow after him. I want to just share a brief story of something that happened to me recently during the Good Friday service a few weeks ago. I was in the service and during worship, back up a little bit. I was praying that weekend that I would have a greater revelation of the cross and of Jesus' resurrection. And I'm in the service during worship, and there was this moment where I felt like I was caught up in the Spirit. And I had this moment where I felt like I could see and hear Jesus calling out to me saying, endure suffering for the joy that is set before you. And in that moment, I felt so united with him in his death and in his resurrection. And this invitation for him, from him to not give up. And if I'm being honest, during that time, I felt like giving up because of how hard it's been. But Jesus spoke and invited me to look at him, this one who suffered for all of our sakes. And to not give up, to believe his story, believe that he invites us to something better. The past year has been really challenging for me. I was in a season of grieving and lamenting over these things. And I've kind of always had these moments in the last 20 years. But really, this year, I felt like I was able to fully grieve and bring these questions before God. I would say things like, God, I have these desires, and I want these things. I want to be in a relationship with a man. And I was able to be honest with God about those things and really wrestled with him and say things like, I don't think you're fair. I don't see your goodness in this. I don't see life in what I'm currently experiencing. I'm just being honest. And it was really beautiful it was a really beautiful space to be in, because in that honesty and the anger that I brought before God, He met me in that. During that week, I was praying that He would speak to me, that He would speak into my sexuality and what I was experiencing, because I've never actually experienced God speak directly to what I was experiencing. I've always been comforted and encouraged by my friends and reading the scriptures, but I've never like experienced Him like speak directly to that. And during this week, I prayed for a word, and I'm talking with a friend, and I just explained to him, like, "Hey, man, like I'm not doing so hot. I've been just lamenting." That's all I told him. He didn't know my story. I just said, "I'm grieving. I would love for prayer." And he starts praying for me. And this friend, I would consider him to be someone who's very prophetic. He really hears from the Lord. As he's praying for me, he says, "Caleb, I don't know what you're experiencing right now, but I just really feel this deep weight from the Lord, this deep burden." And he said, I hear the Lord say, "I see the cross that you're bearing. I know how hard it is for you. And I know the cost that it is for you. And I know how much it will cost you. But I'm proud of you." I never heard God say that before. I'm also not really a crier. And that moment, I just remember weeping in that moment, feeling so seen by God. He answered me in that prayer. I kind of was holding on to God, saying, like, "I will not let you go until you bless me." And He met me in that. I don't really know where to go from here, but yeah, following Jesus is not easy. Sorry to discourage you, but it's really not easy. And I really believe that people, Christians who are gay or experience same-sex attraction, I think that this might sound weird, me saying this, but I have a lot to teach you. And I think that people who are gay and Christian have a lot to teach us. Of what it means to deny yourself and follow after Jesus. There's so much I want to say, but I'm going to just shift gears here and talk a bit about the church, how the church has responded to the gay community, the narratives that the church has told. And I'm sorry if I offend anyone. I'll start with this. I love the church, and Jesus loves the church. Paul loved the church when he wrote the letters. But Paul had a lot of things to say against the church. Though he loved the church and viewed Christ as the head of the church, there was a lot of rebukes, a lot of things that they were not doing right, a lot of things that they needed to repent of. As the church, we need to tell a better story. We need to tell a better narrative than the narrative that we've told about people who are gay. We have not loved as Jesus has loved. And we have not served as Jesus served. We have not listened or sat with people as Jesus did. Christians who are gay, they have to surrender their lives and give up a lot to follow Jesus. And I really believe the church should learn from the surrender and sacrifice of those experiencing same-sex attraction. Surrender means to give up something in order to receive something better. But I don't know if many people in the gay community fully realize that there is something better, because I don't think we've shown that. I don't think Christians have shown that there's something better. I don't think we've shown true community and family. The church has done and said many terrible things in the name of Christ. And I don't believe that we fully realize the damage that we caused or owned up to it. I'm going to take a drink before I say this next thing. as you probably have all heard, if you listen or watch the news, I think at this past year, or a year ago, I think, the conversion therapy was banned in Canada. And it was really interesting seeing Christians post on social media, and this fear, this paranoia, the response of being, oh no, like what are we going to do? Because they were afraid of not being able to counsel people who are gay or just thinking that freedom of speech is under attack. And there was this fear. I'm sure we all agree that conversion therapy is wrong. But what really grieved me, and I think what grieves God's heart, is the response that I saw was, oh no, what are we going to do? When our response should have been, oh no, what have we done? And like I said, I don't think we fully owned up or realized the damage that we've caused people in the gay community. Because that was done by the church. And I didn't experience that, but even saying things like, let me pray with you, like God's going to take this away. Pray the gay away. We've all heard that. Here's another point. During the AIDS epidemic, the narrative that the church told was this was judgment from God. I'm sorry if anyone in this room believes that, but that's not Jesus. That's not the gospel. Jesus almost always attributes sickness to Satan in the gospel accounts. And we know in the new heavens and the new earth there will be no more death or pain. I'm confident that this was not a punishment from God, nor was it something that he desired. As Christians, we say we know the character and nature of God revealed in Jesus, but we so often equate the work of the devil to the work of God. We say, this is God's judgment, this is what God's doing, but I think we're far from the truth when we make those statements. People believe that you would get AIDS just by being near someone who is gay, which enforced this narrative that gay people are these outcasts in society, they're unclean, in a similar way that people viewed lepers in Jesus' day. That narrative is not the good news. The good news is that Jesus sits with the untouchable, and he goes further than that. He touches them and he heals them. He is not afraid of them or ashamed of them. He says to them, you are mine. As Christians, we're always scandalized by the grace of God towards people that we think don't deserve it. We've been reading the story of the prodigal son. The older brother just could not understand why God showed this extravagant grace to this wayward son. I really believe, this isn't in the scripture, but I really believe that God has a special grace on people in the gay community, whether they're Christians or not. I've never said that before. Whether they're following him or not, I believe he has a special grace on them because of the way the church has treated people. Obviously, as you've probably gathered, I've chosen the path of laying down my sexual desires in order to follow Jesus. And I know there's lots of people that view my experience as me suppressing my desires and not being truly myself. But I disagree with that narrative. Because I know the story of the scriptures. I know what it means to be truly human. And I know what it looks like to follow Jesus. It looks like the shape of a cross. Dying to yourself. Like I said, we need to offer a better story, a better narrative, one of good news. Though I've talked about dying and suffering and pain, there's also deep joy and satisfaction in Jesus. And though I've had moments, sometimes very long seasons of grieving, of wrestling with God over these things, the majority of my walk with Jesus has been one of deep joy and deep satisfaction that I've never found anywhere else. The vision of Jesus for community in the church needs to be something we live out. A community of mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters, a family. Like I said, I don't think that people in the gay community have believed us when we say, like, come join our families, family of believers. I don't think we've made it very welcoming. Something that a friend of mine said to me the other day, he said, what did Caleb, when he was 17, need to hear? And I got really emotional because I'd never thought of that. And I realized, I needed to hear a lot of things. I needed to hear that I am safe with God. I'm safe to be myself. I'm safe to cry, to be held. That I will not be abandoned or passed by, that I am seen, that Jesus sees every part of me, and he loves me regardless of what he sees. Also that the shame that I experience and feel isn't from Jesus. I think sometimes we enforce this narrative of this godly shame that people have to live with and carry. Especially people in the gay community, this belief that even just having these attractions is evil and sinful and wrong. But I disagree. Obviously, I believe in Jesus' teachings on sexuality, and when he talks about adultery, lusting after another person. I believe that, but when we're talking about just being attracted to someone, I think that's a different story. My prayer for people that are gay is not that Jesus would heal them from being gay or turn them straight. My prayer for people who are gay is that Jesus would heal them from feeling like they are untouchable, just like the leper, that they would experience full access to God. My prayer is that Jesus would touch them and that they would know in the deepest parts that they are loved, seen, and held by him. That's my prayer. And I would like to open it up for questions. First, I wanted to say I have some resources if you are interested. These are some books that I've really enjoyed and other ones that were recommended to me. So at the top, People to be Loved. It's one of my favorite books by Preston Sprinkle. He really honors people in the gay community by sharing their stories. Yeah, feel free to take pictures. He really honors them by listening and sharing stories, even people that aren't Christian, people that disagree with him. But he facilitates this space. He honors them. And in the rest of the book, he really tries to make a case for both the affirming and the non-affirming side of people who want to follow Jesus. He ends up coming out with a traditional or a non-affirming view. I don't necessarily think those ways of talking about it is helpful. I hear people talk about side B Christians, so Christians who would interpret the scriptures as non-affirming are called side B. So Preston goes through it, and he genuinely tries to make a case for the affirming side. He's a Hebrew scholar. He goes through all the scriptures that talk about sexuality. He goes through all of the words, the Hebrew and the Greek, and he genuinely tries to make a case. And I just really honor and respect his work in that. Another good book is Spiritual Friendship by Wesley Hill. He is a gay Christian, and he just talks about what it's like to be friends with someone who experiences that. And it's a really beautiful book, and I remember one of my best friends at Briarcrest, he actually asked me if he could borrow this book because he wanted to know how to be a better friend to me. Gay Girl, Good God by Jackie Hill Perry. She shares her story. Redeeming Sex by Deborah Hirsch. I would say everyone in this room should get this book. It's not necessarily about people in the gay community, but she just has this beautiful theology of sex and sexuality. And it's just, it's blowing my mind. I've been reading it recently. I recently picked it up. And really, really good stuff. Is God Anti-Gay by Sam Alberry. Anything from Henry Nouwen. It's not the title of the book. It's just read anything. Anything from him. Sorry for those two pictures. He might have a book called Anything. But Henry Nouwen is just an amazing man. And a lot of people actually believe that he was gay. Based on some of the things that he writes and the struggle that he writes about. It's not clear, but a lot of people are pretty certain. And I just really relate to a lot of what he says and really feel seen by his work. Single Gay Christian by Gregory Cole. Listening to Sexual Minorities, Mark Yarhouse. Mark Yarhouse has a lot of other good work as well. And I will just say these authors and these people do hold a traditional view of sexuality. For podcasts, Life on Side B, it's one of my favorite podcasts right now. Josh Proctor is one of the guys that runs it. I actually had the pleasure of FaceTiming with him, and we just had an amazing conversation. He's in the States. He actually was at the, I don't know if he was there, or he had friends at the Florida nightclub shooting. And he was part of that community. And he's chosen the path of Jesus in his sexuality. And a really beautiful man. On their podcast, they facilitate these conversations with people that agree with them and disagree with them. People that identify in all different types of ways. And it's just really beautiful. The Christian Sexuality podcast, really good. Theology in the Raw, again, Preston Sprinkle. He's just really good at facilitating all the conversations that nobody wants to talk about. Hole in My Heart podcast is run by a woman named Lori Craig, I think. She also experiences same-sex attraction, and she is married to a man. So, that's that. I would love to take questions. We have 9 minutes. No pressure if you don't have questions. But I welcome questions if you have them.
So, do you label your sexuality since you're not really allowed to pursue it? Is that...
Label it as in, like, calling myself gay?
Yeah.
Thank you for asking that question. It's funny. For a long time, I was very... like I really didn't like identifying myself as gay, and I was always clear, like, I'm same-sex attracted. But I always felt over the years, one, I just hate saying same-sex attracted. It's too many words. And I don't think it's really clear in communicating what my experience is. And one, that description was a description by the church for people who are gay, because they didn't like the term gay, and Christians have equated the gay identity with gay sex, and so we don't like when people identify as gay. It's no different from saying I'm straight, and so I'm okay with that. At the same time, I think right now, as we talked about narratives that are shaping our identities, I'm allowing Jesus to shape my identity in that, because I believe I've been made by God. And so I will use that to identify myself, but ultimately I don't believe it's the truest thing about me. Yeah. Yes.
What brought you to Jesus?
Wow. Okay. What brought me to Jesus? Jesus brought me to Jesus. I'll say this very quickly. I was the prodigal son throughout high school. And I rebelled. I did a lot of drugs and went down a really dark path. During that time, I had, like I said, spiritual experiences. I actually saw demons. At the time, I didn't understand or know what was happening to me. But I remember my mom saying that God had a plan for my life, and Satan didn't want that to happen. And I was just like, oh, okay, whatever. My mom's a wonderful Pentecostal lady. The good kind. I'm a charismatic, so I'm not. Anyways, so she said that over me, and I was like, okay, whatever. And then years later is when I had that moment in Victoria, and it was just truth that my mom spoke over me years prior. Yeah, God just really came. I like I said, I wasn't pursuing Him. I didn't want to be a Christian. But God had other plans. And yeah, I encountered Him in my room in Victoria. Life just completely changed. And I mentioned I lost my community from back home. But during that time, Jesus just showed me that He's worth it. And if I can take anything away from the last 9 years of following Jesus, is that He is worthy, and He is so worth it, and following Him is worth it. And that's not just for me in my situation, but for all of us here. If you're wondering or doubting if Jesus is worth it, I can promise you He is a worthy pursuit. This is coming from someone who has had to wrestle with this every day. Because I could have just gone off and lived the life I wanted and still want. But I'm choosing Jesus because I do believe and know that His way is better, that He is worth it. So, yes.
So do you have a mentor in your life, and are you a mentor to people?
Yeah, I've had, like I said, people, Briarcrest, that were really instrumental, and I live in Calgary now. I actually have been wanting a mentor again because I kind of lost my old mentor. But I always made the practice of walking with community and being vulnerable. I know for a fact I wouldn't be standing here today telling you these things, and I probably wouldn't believe these things today if I wasn't open and shared those struggles in community and allowed my community to share my burdens. And I think that's why a lot of people who are gay leave the church, because they don't feel that. They don't experience that. And I know I was so lucky to experience that, because that's not everyone's story. So, yeah. I saw another hand. Yep.
How do we use, like, we have some people in the group
who are
identified as bisexual? How do you love
and
not, like,
contribute to
spiritual trauma?
Yeah. For myself, when people loved me well, it looked like allowing me the space to process what I was feeling, to not come in with an answer and a solution, thinking that you're going to fix it, to not enforcing these narratives of Jesus wants to make you straight, as if being straight is the pinnacle of human existence. It's just interesting, like, talking about sexuality, Jesus never had sex. He was single, and he shows us how to be fully human. The Apostle Paul, the same. Sorry, I went off there. But I think that we just treat people the way Jesus treated people. Preston Sprinkle says it beautifully. He says, as soon as we start seeing like the gay as an issue that needs to be solved, we've completely lost what God is wanting to do. What God wants to, what the reality of the situation is, people who are gay are people who need to be loved and need to love. And I think that's really important. To acknowledge that these are people who just want to be loved and they want to love in return. It's not just an issue that needs to be solved. So we sit with people. I've had amazing people sit with me, allow me to weep. And I think it's really helpful too to not, I think in trying to help people and empathize with them, we will say things like, oh, like, I understand what you're experiencing. It's like this. I have friends, some beautiful friends. One of a friend who's married, who compared having desires for other people, comparing that to my situation, and I'm like, it's not really the same. You're married to a woman, and you're able to experience all of that within marriage with a wife that you're attracted to. I can't ever experience that. By God's grace, I actually do hope I will. But that'll be a fun thing when it comes around. So, yeah. Yes?
So, do you support gay
people? I would say I do. Obviously, I think that can mean a lot of different things. But I really believe that Jesus stands with the marginalized. We see that in the scriptures. He's often against the religious elite and fighting for the people that are being ignored or viewed in a negative way. And so I love people in the gay community. In a sense, I'm somewhat part of that community, like a distant cousin. Though I think many in that community wouldn't support my decision either. But I still love people in the gay community. Yes?
Do you think that if we choose Site B or Site A to Christians, yep, how can they have fellowship?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a great question. Okay, we have to end on this question because the next session starts. No, we've got 15 minutes. Oh, I was convinced we were ending now. Whew, okay. Thank you for that question. This is something I've been wrestling with for the last 2 months, actually. So the question was, can both these people in the side A and side B be together in the same community? And the reality is, though I want the church, and the church should be a place that everyone is welcome, that they can come as they are, that they can come and try to figure out what it looks like and means to follow Jesus. But the reality is, if you have both groups together, side A and side B, so people who are, want to follow Jesus, but they affirm practicing a gay lifestyle, or the side B people, myself, who experiences that but chooses to deny myself in that. The reality is, if you have both those people together, one of them is going to feel disregarded and not welcome. That's just the reality. You can't have both in the same space and say to both, you're free to flourish here, because both of those people are contradicting each other. And I think I hear a lot of people in the church say that it's not that the issue of sexuality is a non-issue or it's a secondary issue. But I disagree with that notion. It's very much a primary issue, especially for people who are gay, who are choosing faithfulness to Jesus. That's not a secondary issue for them. And so I think it's really challenging if you're going to say, we welcome both of you in this space to flourish here in your version of what it looks like to be human. I don't know how that can work. And that's hard. I hate that. If I had it my way, both would flourish. In light of everything I've said, God is much more merciful and compassionate than any of us can know, and than any of us have ever experienced. The scriptures say that his mercy triumphs his judgment. And, maybe I'll just leave it at that.
Do you share what you've talked about today online at all?
This will be online.
Okay.
Yeah, but I haven't known.
In regards to, friends or family that we have that, would consider themselves gay and stuff, how would you, navigate, going to, people's weddings? Would you, support that? Or, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, that's a good question. This probably isn't a popular answer, but I wouldn't mind going to a gay wedding. I know people will say, well, then you're affirming this and all this stuff, but Jesus sat with the sinners. He ate with them. He let a woman who was known as the prostitute wash his feet. He didn't care what this was being seen as. The disciples saw this as a evil, wrong thing that he was doing, or letting this woman do to him. And it was likely seen as a sexual advance, what this woman was doing. But Jesus wasn't concerned about what it appeared to look like. And so I would say in a similar way, I don't think Christians should be concerned about who they are associating with. Because Jesus associated with all the wrong kinds of people, and people accused him of all sorts of things. But yeah, I know that's not a popular opinion, but it's my seminar. So. Yes. That's a great question. I remember actually at Briarcrest, I think it was my second year, we had a speaker at a Rethink conference, and he was a gay Christian, and he eventually got married to a woman, And he had it on the screen, this big circle, and he's like, this is my sexuality, this big circle. And he had a little circle, and it was Jesus. And he said, as I continue to follow Jesus, this one circle gets smaller, and this Jesus circle gets bigger, and he showed it on the screen. It's kind of corny, but I remember hearing that, and it was really encouraging for me. And I do firmly believe, stepping out of just talking about sexuality, I firmly believe that as we follow Jesus, we love him more. And despite the suffering that we experience, I do believe that as we follow Jesus, life with him gets better. I really do believe that. I'm not saying life gets better and like everything good will happen to you, but yeah, there's just a more richness to life, but it's still hard. And there's seasons where it's been so hard, but other seasons where it's great. But it doesn't go away. And yeah, that's just the reality. I want to say, I think this is a really important scripture as we end. I think it's Isaiah 56, where Isaiah, God through the prophet Isaiah, is speaking about eunuchs. And I really love this chapter because when I think about eunuchs, I think about people who they were not able to fulfill their desires, especially people who were forced to be eunuchs, which was pretty common. And Jesus talks about this in Matthew 19. He says, there are some who were born eunuchs, whatever that means, some who made themselves eunuchs, and then some who were forced to be eunuchs. And in Matthew 19 and in Isaiah 56, there's an invitation for eunuchs to follow Jesus or follow God faithfully in that state. And for me, I take comfort in that. And Isaiah specifically says, to the eunuchs who remain faithful, I will give them a reward greater than the sons and the daughters. So the reward for the eunuchs who remain faithful will be greater than like everyone else. It's pretty sweet. I want that reward. And so I'm like, God, give it. Give me the reward. So I think, and like I said, I think there's a special grace on people who are gay in the church. And there is great reward in following Jesus. I don't know if that fully answered the question, but I tried. I've got 5 minutes. Technically, I should probably dismiss you now, but thank you. I just want to say, if anyone wants to talk to me, I'm actually at the Mustard Seed booth. I work at the Mustard Seed. And if you want to talk, I'll be around. If you see me and you're like, hey, can we talk? I'd love to talk with you and just hear your story, listen to you. So yeah, thank you so much. And I hope you guys have an amazing weekend.
Thank you.